Hello, welcome to the Helping Humankind podcast. I'm Dawn Pullman. I'm the host, and I get the pleasure of hanging out with shameless do-gooders as they share their stories of helping humankind. We are shining a light on those who are making the world a better place, one act of kindness at a time. Today, we are shining a light on the amazing Sherry Jacobs. Woo! So, Sherry, first and foremost, thank you for being a shameless do-gooder. Truly, the world is a better place with you in it. And I have to share the story of how we met. So I'm going to guess the year is about 2016, 2017. And I was teaching a mediation class and Sherry was there in the audience. And the topic that I was teaching wasn't even trauma-informed mediation. It was on something else. But I went off on a tangent for a few minutes about this idea that I had for trauma-informed mediation. And Sherry comes up to me after the training and she says, I too have been creating a trauma-informed mediation model. And she said, would you be willing to give a TED talk on this? She's the TEDx organizer at the time. And I about fell over and I couldn't believe your kindness and your generosity with that. And that was the beginning of our friendship and the beginning of sharing of ideas. And I can, not very many people can say, you know, like that moment changed my career path. People can't always identify certain things like that, but I can literally say that that moment changed my life.
Wow.
And so thank you.
I
could never,
thank you
seems so like small, like of a gesture for what you've done for me and you don't even know it. Do know it, but you don't know it in terms of that and how it's impacted me. So she's helped me. I'm part of humankind. So part of that idea was that Sherry and I were not stingy with our ideas, if that makes sense. So Sherry, you've got this idea in terms of like open source and how that benefits society. Tell us about that.
So I'll introduce myself. So I'm Sherry Jacobs, and I am an art therapist. I'm a licensed clinical marriage and family therapist. I have done a lot of mediation and was a mediator for many years. That's how we've connected. And I realize probably many of your people that you invite on the show will say that there's so many other people that are doing so much good, and I'm humbled that you invited me and included me on. But when I started thinking about my little vantage point and the good that I might be doing, I realized a lot of it had to do with being very liberal with sharing creative ideas. And even just the way we connected on that trauma-informed mediation, we had exchanged PowerPoints. Rather than staying in our little corners and competing against each other, and it turned out that our thinking was so similar. And I love that we collaborated, and then I sort of backed up from that also and sort of handed up the reins all to you, because I think the confidence of knowing that more ideas will come if we can graciously share our ideas and pass them along and spread them along maybe is why I'm here today talking about the doing good. And I think I've done that in many realms of my life and as a creative and in a creative community of just sharing ideas with the world so that they all catch on. That's my hope.
Yeah.
And that's my game plan. Yeah.
Yeah. So there is a book by Elizabeth Gilbert, Big Magic. And there's this idea that there's all these ideas floating around in the world, or actually they're within you and you can act on them or you can pass them on. And that some people will then have this idea and then somebody else will say, I had that idea. And then the universe says, yeah, but you didn't act on it. You knowingly pass on ideas in terms of you just let someone else, like, I had this idea, but you feel like a better person for it, and so I'm going to let you go with it. That's always, like, my perception of you, and I always have this perception of you as just someone who sees the innately good in people or things that they may not even see in themselves. And I'll give a real quick example. I ran into Sherry at a concert, and Sherry, I talked about, like, I've always wanted to be like a comedian, and Sherry's like, I can see you up on the stage, Dawn, just doing something. And I don't even know if I ever expressed that out loud, but like, you just have this way of like seeing things in me or seeing things in other people that just sort of elevates them. And it's so
cute.
It is. It's amazing.
And a side note was, I think we were saying that because we were laughing really loud.
Yeah.
And it was before a show started, and the lady, like one of the ushers came over and shushed us.
Yeah, we got shushed at a concert.
But it wasn't even, we were just standing there like laughing, and I think we were laughing and nobody else was even smiling around us.
Story and of my
other
life.
People, right?
I am shushed everywhere I go, and I got shushed at a concert.
Goodness, wow.
Oh, okay. Back on topic. So this whole idea of open source in terms of like everybody's got these ideas. Tell me how you play this out in your life. Like, what does that look like for you?
So I was thinking about sort of why you asked me to be on this show. And as I was kind of looking at different avenues of the past decade of my life and collaborations that I've done and creative thinking and different activities and organizations and things and ideas I've shared, I borrowed the idea of open-sourced thinking, which really was something that we generally attribute to the coding world and the movement that took place about 10 years ago of open-source coding so that people could take that idea and run with it to create their own coding and apps and various things. And I have a feeling that we're right on the edge of AI that hopefully will be an open source avenue also for people to engage in. But it doesn't feel like that open sourced idea ever really left the coding world. And as I was consolidating all of my ideas thinking about this podcast, I realized that I think open sourced is really what I've been doing with people and maybe even in the collaboration that we did. And I think there's so many aspects. As I started, I sort of had this explosion of ideas. Yeah. But I think that sometimes people think that sharing ideas might be weak, or if we aren't monetizing on an idea or a creative idea, that that might be a form of weakness. But I really see it actually as a form of strength and a form of like extreme confidence of knowing that if we are openly sharing ideas almost without ego, without expectation for some massive return on it, that it shows a level of confidence because we know that there's many more ideas to come after that. And I just published a book. I have a little show and tell, if it's okay for me to show
it.
My show and tell. This is for a very small audience. It's called EMDR and Creative Arts Therapies. And it actually unites my field of art therapy with the field of EMDR. Really the same thing that happened with us, where we sort of exchanged PowerPoints to see what we were thinking about with trauma-informed mediation. I thought I was one of the only people combining these two like elements together to provide really like helpful therapy with people. And it turned out I found a woman in Buffalo, New York, and I cold called her to say like, hey, I think you might be doing something similar to what I'm doing. And we exchanged PowerPoints. It's like the same playbook. And lo and behold, the way we conceptualized it was almost identical. And we brought a few other people in that we found of art therapists around the world that were doing similar things. We started talking, and what we ended up creating from those initial conversations was like a 350-page, 10-point font book of ideas that we literally just gave the ideas away to help people become better therapists and help like with trauma recovery and all different elements. But I also want to say that we still have intellectual property. And so when this book first went on Amazon, we found that there was a fake one that was like a tenth of the price and that was poorly, like it was, I think the printing was upside down. And so giving ideas away, yes, in the terms of like all of the ideas, the hundreds of ideas we have in here, people stealing our ideas, no. So just wanted to like define the difference between those two.
Yeah. So like an idea for use and application
versus
idea
people
for
stealing
it and stealing or acting like it's theirs
Claiming
making
it's
money
theirs.
Off of it.
Yeah.
Big differences.
Yeah. And I was saying in my profession, like a previous generation of art therapists might not have felt so confident in, I don't know, the growth of the field that if we were giving too many ideas away, we were diminishing from our field. My generation of art therapists are so comfortable and so confident. We really are going out of our field to cross-pollinate to offer and share ideas at conferences and offer ideas even through this book, just to make really the world a better place. Like,
well, and there's an element of fear that you have to face. Like you cold call someone and say, will you do this? Like, that's a vulnerability.
Yeah,
I have this idea. Yeah. I see that you kind of have this idea. Do you want to work with me? It's almost like, do you want to play with me today? You know, and somebody can tell you no.
Exactly. Right.
And so how does one, this is kind of a bigger question, I guess, how does one navigate the fears of this whole open source idea? I mean, I know there's, at the end of the day, you just do it, but what would be some advice or some words of encouragement to someone like, hey, if you've got this idea, here's how maybe it could be bigger and better by doing collaboration or.
I would say that, like, the best sentence I heard in graduate school from a professor, he talked about risk taking.
Yeah.
And he talked about risking well.
Yeah.
And something like cold calling somebody that could be a collaborative partner is risking well, even though it's terrifying. And I think in a post-pandemic era, many of us have lost that ability to sort of take those huge stretches and leaps of faith. But many of the things I've done in the past 10 years, I realized that happened from cold calling and taking a huge risk to think that I maybe don't have the skill set or I maybe don't have all of the things in place to make something happen. And I feel like the opposite is that when we get stingy or fearful of sharing ideas, that's when we all lose out of, like, it feels like there's this opposite of the, either the collaboration doesn't happen when there's a stinginess or a fear.
And so sometimes people feel like, well, I'm not going to do anything because I don't have it all figured out or I don't know that piece of it. But that's where people come in, and that's sort of been the theme of our, I would say, our last two episodes, is you don't have to have it all figured out, because that's where all the people come in, and that's when things can get so much bigger and better than when you even envisioned it, because of the people and their contributions to it.
Yeah.
And so just always thinking about how people can help, and they can just do their part to make something way bigger and better than what you could have ever done alone.
And I think getting ego out of the way sometimes, and knowing that it's okay to share the idea, to step back and let it organically form with others. And even just thinking about corporate America in this era, and I think our generation, were raised by our parents' generation that often had job security, lifelong job security, if they gave enough years and of their life and time and energy towards a corporation, they had longevity. And I think our generation hasn't had that luxury. And so in response, ideas in corporate America, sometimes we have to hold on tightly to them for fear that if it gets out or someone else gets their name attached to it, it might cost us our job or our promotion. And I think academia probably is the worst culprit right now, sadly, because tenure spots are so rare and competition is so fierce for research dollars, that ideas where the place that should be the pinnacle of idea generation is often the most vicious, where ideas don't get shared. It's tragic, right?
So oftentimes people will call me or email me and they'll say, hey, I'm going to talk about trauma informed mediation. And these are people I have never met. They are all over the United States, and they've been asked to do a presentation on trauma informed mediation, or they want to do one. And they'll show me their PowerPoint. They want to make sure they give me proper credit. People are really, I see this as like flattery. I feel complimented that they are like, one, they actually like my model, and then two, that they're going to expand on it or put their own flavor on it, which is fantastic. So, and that's how, like, if anything, I think that my model is just the springboard for other people to make it better. And so, yeah, that's the idea of, I'm not going to be stingy with it. I'm just going to encourage other people to go off with it and do their own thing. Absolutely. And I think also one of the, when you think of ideas as being something bigger than a fixed pie, and if it's just an idea and it's not meant to be just this little thing that, you know, when we start expanding the pie adding other pies, that's when we can feed everybody, right? Like that's probably a good way to describe that. So if you think about collaboration, it's the opposite of loneliness, if you will, in the sense of collaboration is people coming together, whereas now post-pandemic, we have all these people sort of operating in silos.
Yeah.
What are some ideas to help people collaborate more or come out of that silo, if you will?
Right. And I have been very focused, especially as a clinician, watching and walking with people through the pandemic, watching the loneliness, like what we're calling an epidemic.
Yeah.
Vivek Murthy, the Surgeon General, has identified it as a colossal epic, like epidemic, epidemic. Like really it's the loneliness piece. And I would say from small children all the way up to seniors is just catastrophic. And it feels like there's so many other big problems, like loneliness, big deal, whatever, but it is so horrible and terrible right now. People have lost their communities. People kind of in a post-pandemic era just don't know where to find their way back to the friends or the groups they used to have. My colleagues and I are trying to experiment in my workplace at a place called Interurban Art House, where we're trying something like these 8-week sessions called Creative Conversations. Mm-hmm. Instead of calling them loneliness groups or connectivity groups, we decided to name it that, hoping that maybe people that are artistic or creative or looking for, like, literally having creative conversations might find a like-minded people.
Yeah.
We started the first two kind of open-ended, unsure of what they might look like. And we're about 5 weeks into them now. And what's happened was that the collaboration, the collaborative ideas and like-minded people kind of uniting and meeting outside of the groups, we have succeeded in like creating the platform or just a basis, a foundation for people to have those organic conversations happen. Hopefully some things will come from it. But I'm hoping that the next round might be a little bit more intentional of like, how do we help bring people together for a shared idea? And I think the city, living in Kansas City, that we happen to live in a very pro-positive volunteering type of place where people do give their time. But even that, I think people are looking for meaning and connection. And I wonder if this collaborative, creative idea finding and making can be one of the antidotes to the era that we're living in, of this post-pandemic era of helping people find their way back.
Yeah. So a couple thoughts. One, the Interurban Art House is just an amazing, inspiring place. It would be hard to not like want to create something in there. It's just amazing. It's a feel good place. The other part of this is I love the reframe that you guys did with the title of it, the Creative Conversations, versus like Lonely Hearts Club or something, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And so it's just a place where people can go. And I think, then you call it speed friending at one point. Is that what you were calling
it?
Well,
I tried several years ago to have a speed friending event at my local library. And unfortunately, my first one was scheduled for March 12th, 2020. So it got canceled and then it went away.
So
right as we were entering the pandemic.
Which is when people now, they needed it the most.
Right.
And so also, whenever, during the pandemic, I had offered a parenting community group, if you will. And in terms of just people wanting and needing something, we posted it online and we had 92 people register for this.
Wow.
Yeah, it was, and only a third of them showed up. But it did illustrate to me the fact that people were wanting connection.
Absolutely.
People were wanting something.
Yeah.
And I think we're still there, but people are still unsure of how to do it.
Right.
They're still trying to navigate this whole post-pandemic. Didn't you say you guys had it overfilled?
Like, yeah,
you had...
I mean, so these two creative conversations groups, we put it out and they filled up in 2 hours for both groups. Both groups total. We had people, tons of people calling the day after, asking if they could get on waiting lists. It was amazing. And so I guess the listeners might wonder how we could take ideas of, like, we're talking about very big ideas of collaborative ideas turning into these wonderful things like books and all different things. But a person might be saying, well, how could I do that myself?
Yeah.
And I guess I'll go back to that, like, well, I think a big part of this is that risking well and taking some gigantic step of something that is might be very uncomfortable, going to a place, picking up the phone, or reaching out to somebody that might look like they have something going on that's interesting to somebody. And I think loneliness and alone, being alone begets being alone begets being alone. And so many people have become siloed in their own, go to work, come home, go behind my door and lock my door and watch Netflix. And it's hard for all of us to step out of that. And I guess I would invite viewers to maybe think of one maybe tiny, tiny place where you can make that tiny first step of a risking well kind of collaborative thing, whatever that might look like. If it's a community center thing or something in your community or volunteering or, I don't know, just something that looks interesting that feels like like-minded people might be doing that.
So one of my hopes for this podcast is that even if people are in a different part of the world and they hear of an idea that we're doing here and they think, oh my gosh, I could do that. I hope that people just go with ideas that help and they begin to implement them in their own communities. And then the other part of it is the sharing of ideas. And so if someone wanted to contact you to say, hey, I liked that idea of the creative conversations, would you be able to just share some, you know, share how some basic infrastructure, if you will, in terms of how you got that going, or how would people contact you to share, to get that information from you?
Absolutely. So my private practice is called Heartland Art Therapy. My email address is heartlandarttherapy@gmail.com.
Perfect.
Or you can go to heartlandarttherapy.com and connect through there. Yeah, thank you. Okay. And I am like an idea factory, so I just
she
like
is
to,
an idea factory.
How many ideas? Yeah.
For the podcast, she's like idea factory, and then it's just this whole links, also open source, and lots of ideas, which is why I love you and adore you, and you're just always on to something, on to the next thing, which is amazing.
But how do we get to take that open source idea that really has just lived in the coding world and is about to just live in the AI world? And even just, I think, as we enter into the AI world, whatever that is going to look like, we don't even know. Yeah. But we've got this little window of time, I think, that we get to sort of cultivate continued human connections in here.
I think part of how that works is you just now bringing it. Like, I don't think people, a lot of times, we know of something in the back of our mind or we know of an idea, but when you're able to put a label on it and then say like almost like present it like a package, like this is what this is called.
Oh,
and this is what this means.
Naming
it. I feel like you've named it. And then when you name it, you can achieve it more, or you can begin to see other people achieve it more because we were able to actually name something. So maybe you just named it. See, this is how genius Sherry is.
But trauma-informed mediation, I think we both kind of named that on our own and organically, right? We put two different ideas together that made sense together.
Yeah.
And now it's a thing. And now it's your thing, right? It's so cool.
But we did that.
Yeah.
You know? And so real fast, and this part of this whole idea of open source, I mean, you were the TEDx organizer for how many? You did it for two?
I did three of them.
Three of them? In Overland Park.
Yes.
Which is no small task.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, so
like planning seven weddings at once. I did it, yeah.
So what was your idea or your motivation behind that? I mean, I feel like it's the theme of everything we've been talking about today.
Honestly, I tried to get tickets for TEDx Kansas City.
Yeah.
I couldn't get tickets because it sold out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's got to be a way. And so I started digging through the TED website. And I'm like, I can get my own TED license. I will make my own TED and then I will get to go to all of them. And I applied for it and I got it. And I was like, oh, I do not have the qualifications or skill set to pull this off. I probably should just give it back. And I'm like, no, I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to cold call and ask really tough cold calling, risking well things. Like I called a company that makes websites and just cold called them. And it turned out the person that picked up the phone loves TED.
Oh my, yeah.
And was like, yes, we're in. I'm like, could you build me a website in 2 weeks? And they're like, okay. And so that was the beginning of like, all right, wow, these are very scary, hard asks. And that was my first brave thing to do. And so the TED thing, it was a lot of work. It is a lot of work to have it match up to all the TEDs, the TEDx's in the world. There's a lot of hoops to jump through and specifications to make it look perfect. I made a plan of having only local speakers just to feature the do-gooders, kind of like what you're doing here, of local, just honoring local people like yourself that are doing amazing things. And it really, that the essence of TED is open source creativity, yeah, of spreading good ideas.
Yeah.
I think the market has changed, though, because it used to be 18-minute TED Talks. And I think we have a smaller and smaller attention span over the years. And then I think it went down to about 10 minutes were about what people could handle, and then sort of 8 minutes. Yeah, and I know the model's still amazing, but it doesn't feel like that people are sharing TED Talks as much as they used to.
Yeah, I think at the time you had told me, you said, Dawn, you can only make yours 10 to 12 minutes, and you know, you can't say anything. Like, so rather than saying Google, I think I said just I typed in a search engine because I didn't want to give the appearance that I was promoting anything.
Yeah.
And the other thing I thought was interesting is you said make sure you dress that everyone around the world can watch this, and meaning like no tank tops or anything like that. Like, so it wouldn't be offensive to other...
Yeah, really thinking globally.
Global.
Yeah, but TED has just done remarkable things. Look how many ideas have been spread from that. Like, they accomplished what they set out to do, transforming the world and using the internet for good rather than...
During the pandemic, I get this text message from Sherry, and she was like, did you know your TEDx has been moved to TED.com? And I was like, are you serious?
Yeah,
right. Like, I was like, that was probably like one of the highlights of my career. And you shared that up for me. I had no, it's not like TED tells you or anybody tells you. It's just something that you
can really change people's careers and open up doors for people. It's so great to have that platform. So it was really fun to do that. Yeah.
Like I said, you'll never know how grateful I am for you and all that you've done. How can shameless do-gooders or anyone in our audience support you in your efforts?
Oh, mine?
Yeah.
That's a hard one.
Yeah. I didn't prep you. I didn't prep you for that.
Well, therapists always kind of, I think we put ourselves behind the scenes. So
yes.
Go to therapy. Like, take care of yourself. Do some self-care. Yeah, self-care, I think. Everyone does a little bit of self-care. And brings a little bit of their own creativity to the world. I think we're maybe keeping the anger and hostility at bay.
So we have a confession. The back half of Sherry's interview just disappeared. We don't know where it went. So now we have to piece in the ending, which is fine. My motto has been, I've been shining turds since 1976. So here we are. We're going to shine them up. If we just did an audio, we could have probably... just pieced it in and it would have been fine. You would have known anything different. But since we do audio and visual, now you have to see me in a new outfit and me explaining to you exactly what has happened. So anyway, where we were leaving off was actually the drum roll for the shameless do-gooder. This is where Sherry did the big announcement of who she had nominated. And it was, her name is KK Osman. And KK has created an amazing organization called Care Beyond the Boulevard. They provide mobile medicine to KC's homeless population. So they literally go around in a bus 6 days a week providing care. They have designated routes and stops, and everybody knows when they're coming. And so there's some structure to it. And they have volunteer doctors and nurses and everybody who can come and help. It's an amazing organization. And so, KK, you are hands down a certified shameless do-gooder. We appreciate you and all that you do for the Kansas City community and beyond. The world is hands down a better place with you in it. So if you're interested in that organization, or if you would like to help and support those efforts, you can visit carebeyondtheboulevard.org or contact them directly. Ways that you can help the Helping Humankind podcast. You can nominate shameless do-gooders at helpinghumankind.org, or you can fill out the request form if you know of someone needing help or know of someone needing some resources. That's also at the helpinghumankind.org. It's important for me to share that to let you know that the Helping Humankind podcast is sponsored by March Inc. MARCH stands for Mediation Achieving Results for Children. It's a statewide nonprofit that provides free supervised visits, mediation, and legal services to families in the state of Missouri. Those families do have to have an active child support enforcement case with the state of Missouri to qualify for the free services. But if you are interested or want to learn more, visit marchmediation.org. Thanks for tuning in with us. Our next episode will be with Dion King. where we were focused on the benefits of mediation. So obviously I've been doing mediation for 21 years and it's been called lots of things over the years, medication, meditation, all the things. And so Dion's going to talk to us about what it is and what it isn't and some other projects that she's got her hands in. That episode is going to drop the third Thursday of May. Until then, keep on doing good in the world.